We've been fighting for a better, fairer Britain for over 100 years. Discover some of our most profound achievements and greatest legacies. Welcome to our e-learning course on Labour's history and our legacy for Britain. The Labour Party has always been about people. It was formed to give ordinary people a voice and has sought power in order to improve their lives. The fruits of this work have changed Britain for the better, through the most progressive governments in our country's history. Ours is a proud history, with achievements from the NHS to the welfare state that have made a lasting difference to the lives of people across our country. Over the past century, we have been the party of the many, not the few. Use the menu to jump to any section or click Next to work through the sections in order. In this section, we'll take a look at the formation of the party and its first steps in government. The Labour Party was created in 1900, a new party for a new century. Its formation was the result of many years of struggle by working class people, trade unionists and socialists, united by the goal of working class voices represented in British Parliament. It was this aim that united Keir Hardie and the colleagues who gathered for the famous inaugural meeting of the Labour Representation Committee at London's Memorial Hall in February 1900. Ignored by the Tories and disillusioned with the Liberals, they gathered to push for change. From this meeting, all else flowed. Click to find out more about some of the key figures in the founding of the Labour Representation Committee in 1900. Thomas R. Steeles was a Doncaster member of the Amalgamated Society of Railway Servants who proposed a motion to his branch in 1899 to call a special conference on political representation. The Trade Union Congress, founded in 1868 to bring together trade unions, passed a motion in 1899 to organise a special conference to establish a voice for working people within Parliament. This was held in 1900. The Independent Labour Party was a left-wing party established in 1893 with Keir Hardie as its chairman. It helped found the Labour Party in 1900 and affiliated to it, but later separated from Labour in the 1930s. The Fabians, in existence since 1884, was one of the founders of the Labour Representation Committee in 1900 and had a major influence on its founding constitution and early policies. It continues today. James Keir Hardie, a Lanarkshire miner and trade unionist, first became an MP in 1892 and then became Labour's first MP in 1900 in Mercer Tydfil and our first leader in Parliament. Ramsay MacDonald, a Scottish political activist, became the first secretary of the LRC in 1900. He later became an MP, party leader and the first Labour Prime Minister. Slowly but surely, the party grew. The first election campaign in 1906 saw 26 MPs elected to Parliament. Together they chose Labour as their official name. That early growth continued, with more MPs elected in the early years to follow, leaving Labour well placed to challenge for power by the time of the 1924 election. It was this election which saw the first Labour government in our country's history, with Ramsay MacDonald, the party's first Prime Minister. The first Labour government only held office for a short time, but its achievements were notable. Despite having no majority, it passed legislation to improve housing, education, and social insurance, while also addressing unemployment, notably the Wheatley Housing Act, that led to over 500,000 new council homes by 1933. The 1924 government only lasted a few months. 5 years later, came the election of the second in 1929. Dominated by the world economic crisis, the following 2 years were focused on action to tackle the unemployment of the Great Depression. It was not an easy election, and the 1931 election saw only 52 Labour MPs elected. War, the 1945 government and onto the future. Fortunately, one of those who remained after the 1931 election was Clement Attlee. He became deputy leader in 1931, working with a new generation like Ernest Bevin and Hugh Dalton to turn the party's fortunes around before being elected leader in 1935. By the end of World War II, the British public were crying out for change. Labour would lead that change. Our manifesto, Let Us Face the Future, laid out a bold vision, pledging to destroy the five evil giants: want, squalor, disease, ignorance, and unemployment. It was a message which captured the imagination of the country and took Clement Attlee into number 10 on the back of a landslide, winning 393 seats. Attlee's Labour government wasted little time enacting visionary change, introducing social security, bringing key industry back into public ownership, and introducing a major programme of house building, providing safe and secure homes. This excerpt from a piece on BBC Newsnight featuring Dennis Healy, Margaret Beckett, Dennis Skinner, and others gives further background to the 1945 election and Clement Attlee's victory for Labour. Click to play the video. Here are the main achievements of the 1945 Labour government. Click on the icons to find out more. The Attlee government's introduction of the National Health Service will rightly go down as Labour's greatest achievement. Spearheaded by Health Secretary Nye Bevan, the creation of the NHS has transformed our country, removing the anxiety of illness from millions of families. To this day, the NHS is a national treasure and Labour will always protect it. Over 1 million new homes were built between 1945 to 1951, a significant achievement under the circumstances of financial austerity. This ensured that decent, affordable housing was available to many low-income families for the first time ever. 4 out of 5 houses constructed under Labour were council properties. The Labour government passed the National Parks Act in 1949, paving the way for a network of national parks we have today. The 1947 Town and Country Planning Act framed the modern planning system still used by councils in England and Wales. The 60s, 70s and 80s, the Wilson years and onwards. Despite winning nearly 50% of the vote, Labour lost office in 1951. Attlee was succeeded by Hugh Gateskill, and Labour would not return to power until 1964 under the leadership of Howard Wilson. The Labour governments 1964-70 and 1974-79 under Wilson and then James Callaghan were marked by a period of great change. The permanent ending of the death penalty, decriminalisation of homosexuality, legislation to outlaw racial discrimination, and the establishment of the Open University. It was Barbara Castle, our Secretary of State for Employment, who also brought about significant social change as she introduced the groundbreaking Equal Pay Act of 1970. Once again, Labour men and women led the way in modernising and reforming Britain to improve the lives of millions. The Labour government of the 1970s had some successes, such as the Health and Safety at Work Act, despite lacking a working majority. The election of 1979 began the wilderness years of opposition. Initially, under Michael Foot, the party began a period of contemplation and ultimately renewal. His successor, Neil Kinnock, took on the work of reconstruction, with modernising reforms that will be continued by John Smith, who introduced One Member, One Vote, OMOV, to further democratise the People's Party. Labour in government after 1997, the beginning of New Labour.
Following the death of John Smith in 1994, Tony Blair was elected leader, ushering in the era of New Labour. The reforms introduced in this era, a revitalised policy programme built on Labour values hand in hand with a modernised party machinery, would lead to the landslide general election win of 1997.
After 18 years under Tory rule, Labour offered the hope of a better Britain. The governments that followed, under Tony Blair, then Gordon Brown, brought many of the changes our country desperately needed. On the right, you will see just some of the many achievements of Labour's most recent period in government in Westminster. Record investment in the NHS, schools and the police. The introduction of the national minimum wage. Devolution to Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. The landmark Good Friday Agreement in Northern Ireland. The world's first climate change act. In addition, Labour put into practice our values of equality and social justice, introducing civil partnerships, the Equality Act, the Human Rights Act, and legislating for equality of opportunity for all. We also cancelled up to 100% of debt for the world's poorest countries.
2010, Miliband and Corbyn, for the many, not the few. The late 2000s saw a global economic crisis and for Labour, the loss of power at the 2010 election.
Faced with a Conservative government, which was pressing forward an austerity agenda, the leadership of Ed Miliband saw Labour prioritise working people and the protection of public services. He also used his period in office to introduce important party democracy reforms.
Following the election of 2015, a change was in the air for Labour.
With a bold vision for change, renewal and a robust anti-austerity agenda, outsider Jeremy Corbyn won the party's leadership election by a landslide. Under him, the party tripled in size with new members inspired to join a mass movement for change and the work began on a new transformative policy agenda that takes on the powerful few
on behalf of the many. The snap election of 2017 provided an early test.
The Conservatives expected to be returned with a landslide, but with Jeremy Corbyn at the helm, our mass membership campaigning, Labour confounded expectations. Our manifesto, For the Many, Not the Few, laid out a transformative vision for a better Britain, a real living wage of £10 an hour, scrapping tuition fees, mass house building, serious investment in our public services, public ownership of rail, water and post, and a country that works for the many, not the few. The electorate responded, giving Labour its biggest increase in the share of the vote since 1945. Returning 262 MPs, 45% of whom were women, meaning Labour today has more female MPs than all the other parties combined. The following slides showcase Labour's parliamentary history and our general election successes.
From its foundation, the aim of the Labour Party
was to secure parliamentary representation for working men and women. Since 1900, our MPs have worked alongside our other elected representatives at every level to deliver real change for Britain. Labour's parliamentary history is a story of firsts. A minor, Keir Hardie, the first Labour MP and leader. Margaret Bonfield, the first female minister in 1929. Paul Boateng, Bernie Grant and Diane Abbott, the first black British MPs. Move the slider to see how Labour performed at each general election since 1900. Please note that the total number of the Members of Parliament varied over this period from 615 to as high as 707, and this is not shown. The 1900 Khaki election was the first the Labour Representation Committee took part in. Keir Hardie and Richard Bell were the only two LRC candidates elected.
In the 1906 election, which saw a Liberal landslide,
29 Labour MPs were elected, largely thanks to a pact with the Liberals where the two parties did not oppose each other in many seats. Asquith called a second election in December 1910, and again, no party won a majority, but the Liberals were kept in power by the Irish Nationalists and Labour, who had picked up two extra seats. In 1918, the first election after World War I, Lloyd George's coalition, including some dissident Labour MPs, won a huge majority. Even so, the Labour Party increased its numbers to 57 and the Cooperative Party won its first Member of Parliament. The Labour Party made a huge step forward in 1922, taking 142 seats, including the Cooperative Party's four, and becoming the official opposition. However, Labour's leader, R.J. Clines, was immediately toppled by Ramsay MacDonald. Labour's first three women MPs were elected. The Conservative Party lost power in the 1923 election, and Labour, with 185 seats and the Cooperative Party's six, formed its first government with tacit support from the Liberals, despite not being the largest party in the House of Commons. The first Labour government was toppled after less than a year in office, and the 1924 election saw Labour drop 40 seats to 151, including five Cooperative Party MPs, standing as a separate party for the last time. In 1929, the first election after the general strike, Labour almost doubled its number of MPs to 287 and was able to form its second minority government. Margaret Bonfield became the first ever female cabinet minister. Labour's government collapsed in 1931, and MacDonald formed a national government and called an election. The Labour Party suffered its worst ever defeat, falling to 52, and the Conservatives won an absolute majority, but kept MacDonald on as Prime Minister. The national government was re-elected in 1935 with a Tory majority, although MacDonald lost his seat. Labour, under new leader Clement Attlee, recovered somewhat, taking 102 seats. The 1945 election, before the end of World War II, saw a massive 10.7% swing to Labour, who won a huge landslide and 393 members of Parliament, plus several independent Labour MPs. It was the first time the Conservatives had lost the popular vote since 1906. Labour's transforming 1945 government lasted a full 5 years for the first time. In the 1950 election, the Labour Party received more votes than it had in 1945, with a record turnout of 83.9%. However, a Tory recovery meant Labour won a majority of just five seats and 315 MPs. Attlee's government lasted 20 months until he called another election in 1951, hoping to increase his majority. Labour did win the most votes, but the Tories won the most seats and a narrow majority, sending Labour into opposition with 295 MPs. New Conservative Prime Minister Anthony Eden won the 1955 election, which saw a slight shift to the Tories, in what was otherwise considered a dull election. Labour won 277 seats. The Conservatives won their third consecutive election in 1959, now under Harold Macmillan. Labour, now led by Hugh Gaitskill, lost 19 seats and got 258 overall, but their campaign was generally well-regarded. In 1964, Labour's Harold Wilson narrowly beat Alex Douglas Home's Conservatives and put an end to 13 years in opposition. Labour won 317 seats and a majority of just four, As a consequence, Wilson also called another election in 1966. The 1966 election saw Labour gain the working majority of 96, Prime Minister Harold Wilson sought. Labour won 364 seats to 253 for Edward Heath's Tories.
The Conservatives won a surprise election victory in 1970, and Labour left government after 6 years. Opinion polls had given Labour a lead, but polling day saw Labour lose 76 seats and drop to 288 MPs.
Wilson remained Labour leader in opposition. A second election came in October 1974, and this time, Labour won a narrow majority of just 3 seats, with 319 overall. The Labour government's majority disappeared by 1977, and new PM James Callaghan had to survive through a series of deals with minor parties. In March 1979, James Callaghan's government lost a motion of no confidence, and Margaret Thatcher's Conservative Party won the subsequent general election. Labour lost 50 seats to 269 and entered 18 long years of opposition. Labour almost fell to third place in vote share in the 1983 election, with the SDP Liberal Alliance taking over 25% of the vote. Thanks to electoral arithmetic, Michael Foot still won 209 seats, with the Alliance only taking 23 MPs. Neil Kinnock's first election as Labour leader in 1987 saw Labour recover a little from 1983, gaining 20 seats to 229 and winning 31% of the vote. The first black British MPs were elected, Labour's Diane Abbott, Paul Boateng and Bernie Grant. The Conservatives won the 1992 election, their fourth consecutive victory, with John Major as the new Prime Minister. Labour had had a consistent, if narrow, lead in the polls, and the result was a surprise to many. Labour gained 42 seats, taking 271 overall. Labour, now under Tony Blair's leadership, ended its 18 years in opposition and won a landslide victory in the 1997 election. An increase of 145 saw Labour on its highest ever number of MPs, 418. A record 101 Labour MPs were women. In 2001, Labour was re-elected to serve a second term of government with another landslide victory, losing just 5 seats and taking 413 seats overall. Tony Blair became the first Labour Prime Minister to serve 2 consecutive full terms. 2005 saw Labour's most recent election victory, albeit with its majority reduced to 66. Labour took 355 seats, down 48 on 2001. Tony Blair stood down as Prime Minister and Labour leader in 2007 to be succeeded by Gordon Brown. Labour lost the 2010 general election, losing 91 seats and falling to 258 MPs. However, no party won a majority, and David Cameron's Conservatives only formed a government after the Liberal Democrats entered a coalition. David Cameron won an unexpected overall majority at the 2015 election. Although Ed Miliband's Labour increased its vote share, it lost a net 26 seats, falling to 232 members of Parliament.
New Prime Minister Theresa May gambled on an election in 2017 to increase her majority, but in fact lost the Conservatives' majority. Labour, now led by Jeremy Corbyn, surged in the popular vote to over 40%, gaining 30 MPs and taking 262 seats.
Click on the images to find out more about Labour women in Parliament. The Trailblazers. Women gained the right to stand for Parliament in 1918, the same year women gained the right to vote. 3 women were elected in the 1922 election as Labour MPs. Margaret Bonfield, Dorothea Dewson and Arabella Lawrence. Bonfield became the first female minister of any party in 1923. and the first female cabinet minister and privy councillor when she became the Minister of Labour in the Labour government of 1929 to 31. Next, Ellen Wilkinson was elected in 1924, the only new Labour female MP in that parliament, and went on to lead the Jarrow March in 1936. Jenny Lee was elected in 1929, aged 24, too young to vote. By the start of World War II, 16 women had served as Labour MPs. After 1945, the 1945 Labour landslide saw 15 women elected as new Labour MPs, including Bessie Braddock and Barbara Castle, who would go on to be the fourth woman to become a cabinet minister in 1964. Harriet Slater became the first woman to be a government whip in 1965, foreshadowing Anne Taylor, the first female chief whip in 1998. In this video, Emily Thornberry discusses her political hero, Barbara Castle. 1997, a sea change. In 1987, just 21 women were elected as Labour MPs. The following year, the Labour Women's Network was founded to support the election of more women to Parliament. The 1997 general election saw a large increase in the number of women in the House of Commons, with 101 Labour Women MPs elected out of a total of 120 women,
a huge jump from the 37 Labour Women MPs elected in 1992.
A large part of the reason for this was the introduction of all-women shortlists in the run-up to the election. Joan Ruddock became the first Minister for Women in 1997.
119 Labour women were elected to Parliament in 2017.
A record 45% of the total. Labour has more women MPs than all the other parties put together.
In 2018,
women MPs marked the centenary of women voting and of women in Parliament. This was a proud moment, but there is still more to be done.
Margaret Beckett is the longest serving female MP in the history of the House of Commons. She was an MP for Lincoln from 1974 until 1979 and has served as MP for Derby South since 1983, later serving as the party's deputy leader and acting leader. Harriet Harman is the longest continuously serving female MP in the history of the House of Commons. She has been an MP since October 1982. Most recently re-elected in 2017. In June 2017, Harman was dubbed Mother of the House by Prime Minister Theresa May in recognition of her status as the longest continuously serving woman MP. Harriet was Labour's deputy leader from 2007 to 2015 and acting leader in 2010 and 2015. Click on the years to find out more about Labour's logos. The early Labour Party did not have a logo in the modern sense when it was founded. In 1924, a competition was held to design an emblem for the Labour Party. The winning design, shown here, symbolised liberty, the torch, workers by hand, the spade, and by the brain, the pen. The emblem was used on membership cards, stationery and internal publications for some 50 years, but not on election or campaign materials. As a consequence, it was not widely known by the general public. In this period, the party had no standard font or design style. The colour red was adopted for campaign materials in the 1930s, albeit with regional variations, such as green in the northeast of England. In 1974, the existing emblem was updated and stylized. This became known colloquially as the knife, fork, and spoon. Again, this version was used on membership cards, stationery, publications, and merchandise, rather than on election material. In this period, there were still no design guidelines or recommended typefaces. Following the heavy election loss in 1983, the Labour flag logo was introduced. This logo was used more widely than previous emblems, including on event backdrops and campaign materials. In 1986, the Labour Party did a complete overhaul of its corporate branding. The Rose logo, designed by Michael Wolfe, was introduced and a style guide was developed. This was accompanied by a media launch. The party now had approved colours and house fonts. Plantin Bold and Plantin Light. In 1992, Franklin Gothic was adopted for headers and strap lines. Ahead of the 1997 general election, the New Labour, New Britain emblem was introduced. Following the election, this was formalised into a red square, becoming an integral part of the branding alongside the logo. In 2000, the font used in the logo was changed to Franklin Gothic, so aligning it with other emblems. The stem of the rose was shortened and the party's website appeared in versions of the logo. In 2006, a rose in a square began to appear as a design feature, and in 2007, a new logo featuring this rose was introduced. Neo Sans became the party's font. The New Labour square was replaced with a New Labour for Britain element used until the party's 2010 election defeat. In 2015, Neo Sans was replaced as the party's font by Open Sans. Alternative versions of the logo are available in Scotland, Wales, and candidates standing as Labour and Cooperative. How much do you know about the history of the Labour Party? Here's a quick quiz, 6 questions, just for fun. Drag and drop each Labour achievement onto the corresponding period in government. These achievements meant a safer workplace and dignity in pay, access to further education for all, 500,000 new council homes, and protection for our environment. Drag and drop the names of some of the past leaders of the Labour Party into the chronological order they served in. Note, this is not a complete list. That's right, you put them in the right order. Sorry, no, not quite. The correct order is Keir Hardie, Ramsay MacDonald, Clement Attlee, Harold Wilson, James Callaghan, Michael Foot, Neil Kinnock, and John Smith. Who spearheaded the introduction of the National Health Service? The introduction of the National Health Service was spearheaded by Health Secretary Nye Bevan during Attlee's government and will rightly go down as Labour's greatest achievement. Who spearheaded the introduction of the National Health Service? In what election year did the Labour Party win 418 seats, its highest ever number? In what election year did the Labour Party win 418 seats, its highest ever number? Labour, under Tony Blair's leadership, ended its 18 years in opposition and won a landslide victory in the 1997 election. An increase of 145 saw Labour on its highest ever number of MPs, 418. A record 101 Labour MPs were women. Which Labour MP is currently the longest continuously serving female MP of the House of Commons? At January 2019, click on an image to select. Harriet Harman is the longest continuously serving female MP in the history of the House of Commons. She has been an MP since October 1982. Thank you for completing this module. Why not try another module in this course? Click exit to close this module and return to archive.